Elliot, starting at the start, what are the most important things that employers can and should do to foster talent development among their workers?
Well, first of all, it's an honor to chat with you, Haley. I'm going to start at a funny place, because I think if we think about talent development, we've got to think about it from a dual perspective. One perspective is the activities that we do that are done with, to, or for our employees, you know, and that's obviously we ideally have to do it with their consent, we hope with their excitement and motivation. I have become convinced, though, that there's a parallel dimension of this, which is about brand and social context, which means not only do we have to offer or find a way for the worker to have access to experiences, credentials, credits, and the like, we also have to impact what the brand is of A, their career, the brand of what work is, and I think in a significant way we have to brand those things that we talked about that you could do, skills, courses, credits, apprenticeships, and the like. We've got to brand it in a way that the worker can explain it to themselves, can explain it to their buddy, can explain it to their parents in a language and a construct that they get, that fits, and is motivating. You know, now, if we use an example, and you know I've used this from time to time, I've done a lot of work with the Navy and the military. Very often the people that come in, particularly at that front line, are not overly career-oriented. You know, I mean, in other words, it's a positive or it's a default thing that they're doing. And usually by the time they get out of basic training 6 weeks later, they have in their brain a brand around what promotion, career, and advancement could look like in the military. Because the military decides that part of what they have to do in bringing somebody in is to give them a view and a brand so that that person can say to their parents, their friends, their girlfriend or boyfriend, I'm in this program and I'm really excited because I'll be able to, after this, qualify for this, go to that institute, get that role, and that'll lead to a posting here or there. So what I would argue is that we've done part two really well. You know, as you say, there are lots of resources out. I don't think we have succeeded at part one. And so, because we – yeah, go ahead.
No, I was – well, that's so interesting. And so it's a the question I would ask about brand, right, immediately my mind went to your corporate social responsibility, your brand value kind of thing. But what you're saying is that – we need to demystify all of the stuff and
right. Even
program it or package it in a way that's sensible, not just to the employer who's doing it, but to more importantly to the employee who's taking part of it.
Right. So let's use two working examples from frontline workers, and we can go to others. Let's look at that person who's in a retail store. Let's look at that person who's in a a hotel accommodation situation. In both instances, they may have taken that job that they're in by opportunity, by random, by necessity, okay? Now, when they're in, once they get in there, so once they are working in a store, working at the front counter, cleaning a room, or some other frontline role, it's clear that many of those organizations that you and I work with have gone out of their way to say, here are credits, here's skills, here's the like.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the majority of workers that are there have a brand that says, have a brand inside saying, this is great, I've started here, and you know, in 5 years I could be an assistant store manager. or later this year I could do this, or many people who work here have gone on to do this type of program next. I think what we've done is we have a, most of our brand is around the institutional brand. You know, like you said, the language of the corporation, it looks great in the mission statement. It looks great, you know, in the stock report. And by the way, it works for those workers that are deeply motivated. They have the right right frontline manager. Maybe they have a relative who goes, this is awesome. But, you know, in the Navy, it's more universal. By the time they get done with those 16 weeks, almost every one of them can start to imagine what they're, even if they're saying, I'm going to leave the military at the end of 2 or 4 years, they can imagine the career path and the options. I'm not sure we've been able to do that with the majority of our workforce at that level. I think when we go up frames, it gets a bit different. You know, when they're graduates of a college already, when they come out of a certain, you know, if they went to become phlebotomists and they went through a training program, they probably now know what an advanced phlebotomist or a hospital advanced tech would look like. So, like, they learn that as part of that skill set. I'm not sure our frontline workers have a brand recognition of what you and I have played with. What is their ladder, or what do their ladders look like?
Right.
And even if they hear, you know, Jose started my job and he's now a, you know, he's now an assistant manager of a Walmart in New Jersey, I'm not sure they see the ladder to get them to where Jose is.
Yeah. Well, and you said that, you know, the famous word path, right, the pathway. And I wonder then, to that end, it's really difficult, seen over and over, for employers to fully commit to anything, to a path, right,
particularly for an
individual who's, you know, huge variation between and among and all of that. And I wonder, you know, as we think about this development of even whether it's sort of an intrinsic motivation, whether there are so what would be like the key thing that you think could inspire either the employer to create the path or the employee to look at something and say, I see myself in that?
Right. And we have to recognize that we have entered a phase of our economy where there's a lot of need for frontline workers who aren't going to necessarily be promoted. I mean, bluntly, the organizations want to retain them rather than lose them in some instances. But for the most part, most of those people who are starting in as fast service people at a restaurant, the goal is not to make the managers. The goal is that they do that job real well for as long as they do it, they show up, they live by the code of conduct and the like. Now, what my friends at McDonald's would say is whether or not we ever promote them, we would really like to create a situation where they can say 2, 4, or 40 years later, I got my first job at McDonald's, and thank God they helped me get a certification, a degree, an apprenticeship. And so one sees that they're, to use our phrase, they're ladder worthy and they're ladder ready, you know, if we think about both of those. But what I'm getting at, and it almost jumps ahead to one of your other questions, Haley, I think we've done a better job of providing the interventions than we have in creating a psychology around why you would use them, mm-hmm. how you would use them, how you would describe them to others. You know, I mean, this even came from my conversations with Mrs. Obama about, you know, one of the real problems is colleges have these amazing programs now of financial aid and of, you know, of development for kids who are, you know, are coming from disadvantage and the like. And the challenge is not adding more of those activities. And it's not even adding more at the high schools, although I think we could. The challenge is getting kids to have at least one relative or neighbor to help them build a brand that they too could go to college. So it's not getting City College to do more because they're ready to take that kid. It's getting, you know, it's getting Patricia to talk to her aunt, uncle, neighbor, older brother, or friend of the family to say, hey, Patricia, you could go, and if you went to that college, you could fill out these forms, and even though you're poor, we could afford it. You know, like, so it's the benefit with the brand that equals stickiness.
I think we've
done really well at building the benefits, but I don't think we've done real well at building or measuring how we've done or failed to do on the brand.
Yeah, I think that is totally right. And sort of pivoting back to the employer role in all of this, of course, we see a lot of proliferation of programs, right? And I think that's been one of the challenges that we've been sort of struggling with, and I know that we've talked about a lot. And so it seems as though we're missing the boat. Maybe a lot of employers are missing the boat too, as well as the proliferators themselves, about expecting a program to do the hard work of getting to the psychology of the question, which you point out, right?
Right.
But also never fully considering what's already there, what could be leveraged, what could be slightly changed, as opposed to just planting something new.
To get ready for our conversation today, I made a phone call to an acquaintance I know who works at a restaurant in Manhattan, you know, and we've become friends because, you know, she serves me and my theater friends there. I'm not close to her, but I had a conversation with her, and she's probably 21 or 22, and she's never been to college, and she's in a decent restaurant earning decent tips, but, you know, not great. And I said to her, I said, if your restaurant offered you college credits, would you take it? And she'd say, what job could I get with those credits that I can't get without them?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I ended the conversation there because in many ways she was telling us that the benefit alone wouldn't make a difference to her because she doesn't have a ladder or pathway map validated by its impact on career life revenue, you know. And so, and you and I are probably in somewhat agreement on this, I think one of the problems with a lot of the community college funding that we got at the beginning of the Obama administration was we funded all of these programs, but I'm not sure we changed how the learners thought about it, you know. So, you know, we had a lot more funding for programs, but I'm not sure there was this excitement that, wow, I can get, because of this funding, I'm going to have a better life and career. And the kids that went, or the adults that went, probably or may have that. But the issue is building it, will they come? And part of why they would come or not come is what's their reference, what's their social reference about people who do this, what happens to them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so you've answered several of the questions that I was asking, and that's really good. I like that. Because I do think my question was, you know, if you were building a company from scratch, what sort of structure, your talent development structure, would you create up front? And I think what you would build is a heavily branded from both the, you know, it looks like something special. It doesn't look like a tack-on that you put in your employee handbook. It doesn't look like a program. It looks like a culture, right? And it would be surrounding your potential learner, right, or your employee with all kinds of resonant things, you know, your peer, your family, giving you language to describe what you're going through.
And go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, and Haley, part of where I was coming on this, and this might be too big of a hold, but I was imagining you've got these different clusters, you know, things that we do at colleges for degrees, things we do at colleges for credit that may or may get to a degree, things we do that are not necessarily college, but they're credentials, you know. Then we back up things to do that are programs at work, you know, employer-funded programs. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff out there, you know, watching a TED Talk or stuff like that. The dilemma is that there's no common language that links all of that to a person's career perspective. You know, so here's an interesting sidebar. So my friend she is the owner and president of a college out in California that primarily works with Asian and Hispanic restaurants, okay? What she's found is that the owners of those restaurants are very good in helping their employees understand that if they go to programs that they help fund at that college, here are the jobs they could get at their restaurants or outside their restaurants. So they've woven together the employer's stake, a college/degree stake, and linked it to what the career ladder might be in that. And then there's a lot of referencing that goes on. Now, they could do that because it's usually one or two ethnicities, and these are more owner or franchise-run places. But there's where my fantasy comes in, that we somehow do a better job of hardwiring all the different benefits that are out there or activities in a way that maps back to the employee's self-concept of what their life opportunities are.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And so we've been, as you know, Lumina's been, we're all about credentials. And we think credentials are actually super important because they are an external symbol or signal of what you know and are able to do. And so I know that the field, you know, particularly in some industries more than others, right, tech is a really good example where there seems to be some movement away from credentials. As you're out there talking with everybody, because I know how many people you talk to in a given week, are you seeing any changes among employers and corporate learning leaders about the value of credentials?
Yeah. There's a little bit of confusion. I won't say fatigue. There's a little bit of confusion about where the field is in terms of credentials being helpful for the employee, helpful for this employer, helpful for the next employer, and not accelerating, too fast accelerating departure, you know. So those are the kind of the elements that are there. And I think it very much varies by what the degree of skilling that the credential reflects. Not degree of effort it took to get it, but the degree of skilling that it takes. So in the early days, nobody got to touch my computer unless they could show me they had a Novell or Microsoft engineer certification. You know. It was literally, don't you take the screws off of that box. You know, I'd literally say, bring it, show it to me. And one time I actually checked it out because I was doubtful, you know. We have most of the people who work at Best Buy right now in the Geek Squad do not have a credential. Now, they're internally trained, but a lot of the tech world at the more consumer level has eroded credentials. Probably the best place where you see that is there is no cell phone credential. And yet one of the biggest areas where people work is the cell phone industry, you know. And they range from a little to a lot of product training, a little to a lot of sales training. Certainly the women and men who work back where you drop your phone off may have been trained more, but bluntly, there is no certification. So somebody at T-Mobile who's a frontline clerk can view that they end up being a certified Cell X, and either T-Mobile or, AT&T would hire them. Mm-hmm. But there's a great example where I wish they would. Or, now here's where we get to the next stage. Is there somewhere out there a two-year program that is called something like digital communications degree? And it includes understanding technology, understanding marketing, understanding the rate of change of technology. In other words, if Sprint or T-Mobile paid for that person to go to a college and didn't want them to leave the cell phone industry, I don't think there's a program to send them to. And my fantasy is there would be, because then T-Mobile has a better chance of keeping them or keeping them in the industry. You see what I'm getting at? If you could weave the higher ed program or the certifications closer back to how employers think of hiring people, wow, that would be a win all the way around.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a lot of really good examples of these partnerships that grow up between an industry or a company and, and an institution. The hard part is scaling them so you can get so your credential from X institution that's been generated by this company has got the same value across the industry in any company, right? I think we're particularly interested in the credentialing question for folks who have been underserved for a long time, right? Folks who don't have social capital or their network to lean on, or resources to lean on. So, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, I go back to the Girl Scout, Boy Scout model. This gets us back to that weird, funny stage of badges.
Yeah.
To me, in the best of all worlds, badges end up making their way to enabling a credential.
Yeah.
To me, a badge isn't a credential. But a credential could be achieved by having X badges and some other experience or assessment.
Exactly right.
Okay. So in the best of all world, there would be 8 cell phone industry badges that then could lead to either a cell phone certification or could be done in conjunction with a community college and could be applied for 50% of a degree there.
Yes, that's exact. And we've talked about this before. Right? And I think that's precisely the vision. What you really want to do is make sure that folks who are, who can't go to 4-year college right out of high school, and have to go to the military, or want to go to the military, or want to work for a while, can get those experiences codified in one way or another so they can prove to potential employers that they have the skill, knowledge, and abilities to do the job.
Right. Some of it is, if we can fantasize, we have a shared archaeology around skill and talent readiness that mm-hmm. is embraced by employers, by associations, and by higher ed. Because the challenge with a lot of the higher ed, and so, my colleague who's a restaurant person, in a nutshell summarized it. She knows it's a good thing, but she's not surrounded by other people who, while being a waiter, have done that. And she has no social evidence that doing that would lead to a better life for her.
Yeah.
Her career path will be to get to a better restaurant rather than to get to a better credential.
And so speaking of the post-secondary sector, there's been a lot of new entry into the into this space, and I know a lot of companies are seeking out other other methods, other providers of post-secondary level education. But what should you think post-secondary institutions should do to become more responsive to employers' needs?
Well, you know, the problem here, I served 14 years on a college board of trustees, and I was always an outlier because I always felt that we ought to more tightly map our courses and even our degrees back against career opportunity. And the faculty of those institutions, now the liberal arts, but I've even heard it bluntly for some of the faculty from, you know, community colleges or technical colleges, are often resistant in letting the curriculum be defined by job readiness, you know, because they've got a view that they're developing the person, so let's not overly concentrate on, you know. So I'll give you an interesting working example. It's not appropriate, but you can see where my brain is at. So I was on the phone yesterday with a friend from Skidmore College, the board I served on, and he's retiring in the music department. And he said to me, if you were president, what would you do there? I said, well, I'd probably go out and start a program that would let you at the end be ready to be a stage manager on Broadway. Because we're not good enough to get actors on Broadway, but a lot of people coming that have kind of a hybrid liberal arts degree. And he said, oh, wow. They would eat it up. And then he said, and the faculty would never approve it. Because they don't believe that their degree should end in a job. They believe that their degree should end in a development level that helps you get a job. I think we have to better, more tightly weave higher ed in a connected, not saying it's mandated, but to point to the job readiness that it does.
Yeah.
And even community colleges that you think would be all about this, I get underwhelmed with it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you've raised there about 15 other questions about very strong sort of philosophical question, right? And so for our last question, because we are running out of time, what's one thing that you think we could do that would just really light this fire? And I want to just preface by sort of saying, like, we have thought hard for a really long time, you and I together, about all of the things. We've got employers sitting on tons of resources right now. We've got actually, I think, a movement happening, starting to happen in employers getting worried about their human capital. So what do you think is one thing that we could do?
I think if we could figure out how to talk about skills and readiness in a language that vibrated with our frontline workers' education, and even in some cases, language base. You know, let's stop talking about talent development, because I don't think there's a human being that's ever said to me, ooh, I'm being talent developed. You know?
Yeah.
And I know what it means, but it's kind of like my plumber talking about insulated PVC pipe, you know, like, you know, I know we need it, but don't talk to me about it. You know, like it's not, I don't get it. So I actually think if we could focus and do some user experience research on how we use language that vibrates with this under opportunity group, vibrates with somebody who hasn't gone to higher ed and maybe doesn't have any relatives that went to higher ed, at the same time vibrates internally with HR.
Yeah.
And maybe if we're lucky, vibrates with how our education folks, but if we could create some language, you know, and I kind of want to get the Girl Scouts at the table to, you know, to help, but, you know, we could make a huge difference. Because when I talk to chief learning officers, they will tell you they've got all the programs on the books, and they do it because they want to benefit the employee and attract the employee, and that when they do employee satisfaction surveys, they're never mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a branding and language problem, Haley. You know, it's not a program problem. It may be a little bit of a program problem, but I think it's a branding and language problem.
That I 100% agree.